Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Colorado Kitchen Stories, read by Gretchen Miller, featuring the Blind Kitchen Blog, Colorado Food Magazine, and Taste of the Peaks. We're going to start off today with a recipe from the Blind Kitchen for lemon zucchini bread. This lemon zucchini bread includes lemon, maple, and thyme to create a special flavor profile. Zucchini is a mild, moist ingredient when baked into a bread or cake. In this recipe, other flavors such as lemon, maple, and thyme add a unique flavor profile that most people won't be able to name, but it makes it very special. Yield one standard loaf or a 9-inch by 13-inch cake pan. This recipe has 8 sections. First, you're going to preheat the oven and prepare the pan. Second, prepare the citrus and zucchini. Third, mix the wet ingredients in a medium bowl. Fourth, mix the dry ingredients in a large bowl. Fifth, combine the wet and dry ingredients. Sixth, bake the bread. Seventh, prepare the glaze while the bread bakes. And eighth, remove from the pan and glaze and enjoy. The ingredients you'll need are 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, 1/2 cup of dark brown sugar, tightly packed, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon nutmeg, 1/2 teaspoon salt, 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme. Thyme adds a mildly floral note. It will not taste herby or savory, so don't worry about that. You're going to need 2 medium or 1 large zucchini. This makes about 2 cups grated, 1/4 cup of neutral oil, 1/4 cup of sour cream, 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 2 teaspoons of pure maple syrup, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, and 2 tablespoons of lemon zest. For the lemon glaze, you'll need 1/2 cup of powdered sugar, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1 teaspoon of lemon zest, and 1 teaspoon of heavy cream, and 1/8 teaspoon of salt. Here are the instructions. For step 1, you're going to preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Step 2, prepare your pan. Grease the bottom and sides, then place a parchment paper sling into the pan to make removing the bread from the pan easier after it's baked and cooled. TBK tools, the baking grid pan, and also a butter slicer. Step 3, zest and juice both lemons. Recipe tip, it is helpful to zest your citrus before you cut it. TBK tools, a cut glove, a mini box grater, a mesh strainer, and dough and pastry work tray. Step 4, you're going to wash and grate 2 medium or 1 large zucchini. This will produce about 2 cups of grated zucchini. Recipe tip, there is no need to peel or seed the zucchini. As it runs through the grater, these are cut into very small pieces and they won't be detected after baking. Plus, it keeps its fiber and nutrients. TBK tools for that is an extra large box grater, a bench scraper, and dry measuring cups. Step number 5, drain the grated zucchini and set aside. Recipe tip, you can place the grated zucchini in the center of a cheesecloth or a thin dish towel and then gather the 4 corners together, trapping the zucchini into a ball in the center. Then twist the towel tightly, forcing the liquid in the zucchini out of the food and through the towel, and this will result in the zucchini measuring only about 1 cup, as much of the moisture will go down the drain. A TBK tool for this is a straining system, which is a large cheesecloth bag, which is included. Step 6, grate 2 tablespoons of very cold butter, put in the freezer until ready to use. And the recipe tip, frozen butter is easy to grate into small pieces. When the bread is baking, the frozen pieces will melt but form an airy structure in the batter as they cook, which will result in a lighter and tastier outcome than if you use only oil. But the oil does not lose moisture as steam when the bread is cooking, so it's important to use both for a moist and tasty outcome. Step number 7, whisk 2 eggs in a medium bowl. Recipe tip. It's a good idea to crack an egg into a smaller dish before adding it to the mixing bowl and other ingredients. It's quite easy to detect shell fragments when there is only one egg to inspect. When you are sure there are no eggshells, add the egg to the medium mixing bowl. And then do the same with a second egg and whisk. TBK tool that's helpful for this, a mixing bowl set of 3 with lids, handles, and spout. Step number 8, you're going to add 1/4 cup of neutral oil. TBK tool, wet measuring cups. Step number 9, add 1/4 cup of sour cream. TBK tool, thumbprint spreader. Step number 10, add 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract. And TBK tool, which means the blind cook tool, wet measuring spoons, pitcher, and funnel. Step 11, you're going to add 2 teaspoons of pure maple syrup. Step 12, add 2 tablespoons of lemon juice. Step 13, add 2 tablespoons of lemon zest and mix all wet ingredients until well combined and then set aside. Step 14, you're going to add 2 cups of all-purpose flour to a large, deep mixing bowl. Recipe tip. Using a larger, deeper bowl for mixing ingredients can offer less chance of ingredients coming out of the bowl when mixing or whisking them. A TBK tool for this is dry measure cups. Step 15, add 2 teaspoons of baking powder, TBK tool, dry measuring spoons, and a long wood spoon for stirring. Step 16, add 1/2 teaspoon salt. Step 17, add 1/2 cup of granulated sugar. Step 18, add 1/2 cup of dark brown sugar, tightly packed. Step 19, add 1 teaspoon of cinnamon. Step 20, add 1/4 teaspoon nutmeg. Step 21, add 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme. Recipe note, the thyme pairs beautifully with lemon and will add a subtle floral note, not herby at all. Step 21, mix the dry ingredients until well mixed. Step 22, add the grated drained zucchini and coat it with the dry ingredients. Step 23, add 2 tablespoons of very cold grated butter to the flour mixture and incorporate quickly with your fingers. Step 24, add the wet ingredients to the large mixing bowl and stir until just combined. Recipe tip, overmixing can cause a less tender outcome. Pizza dough is overmixed because you want a tougher product that can stand up to sauce and other ingredients without falling apart. A muffin is much more tender but could never serve as a pizza delivery system. Step 25, pour the mixture into the baking grid pan and bake for 45 to 55 minutes until done in the center. Recipe tip, make the lemon glaze while the bread bakes. Recipe note, the center is the last part to cook, so you want to be sure to check that the center is done. One way to determine this is to insert a clean, dry toothpick into the center and pull it out and check to see if there is wet batter sticking to it. If there is, it needs to be cooked more. Another method is to use a talking thermometer. The center of a baked good should be 200 to 209 degrees, and because of the moist nature of the zucchini, cooking it to at least 205 degrees is recommended. TBK tool, talking thermometer. Step 26, when the bread is done, let it set in the pan for about 10 to 15 minutes to allow the cooked ingredients to cool and firm up. But then use the parchment sling to remove it from the loaf pan. The longer you leave it in the hot pan, the more steam is released and you risk having a soggy bottom on your loaf of bread. Step 27, make the glaze in a medium bowl and whisk together 1 tablespoon of lemon juice. Add 1 teaspoon of lemon zest. Add 1 teaspoon of heavy cream. Add 1/8 teaspoon of salt and whisk until blended. Add 1/2 cup of powdered sugar and stir until blended. The mixture will be slightly runny but smooth. And step number 32, drizzle or spread on the top of the still warm or cooled bread. Recipe note, do not be tempted to add a thick layer of this glaze. A thin layer will complement it greatly and not make it overly sweet. Enjoy. Next steps. The Blind Kitchen offers adapted tools, helpful strategies, and specialized knowledge to blind and visually impaired people who want to cook safely, confidently, and independently. Our collections are available online, as are our short instructional videos. Shipping is always free. Everyone has a place at the table in the Blind Kitchen. I am writing to share some incredibly exciting news that has me brimming with enthusiasm and anticipation. As the president of the Hispanic Restaurant Association, it gives me immense pleasure to announce the relaunch of the Colorado Food Magazine podcast, alongside the introduction of food tours and visits that will take us on a culinary journey across the beautiful state of Colorado. Our podcast has always been a platform to celebrate the rich tapestry of flavors and stories that make Colorado's food scene so vibrant. With this relaunch, we aim to dive even deeper into the heart of our culinary landscape, bringing you closer to the passionate chefs, innovative restaurateurs, dedicated farmers, and skilled ranchers who contribute to our diverse gastronomic heritage. I'm thrilled at the prospect of exploring new eateries, discovering hidden gems, and sharing the compelling narrative that define our local food culture. One of the most exciting new ventures is the Glendale Farmers Market, an extension of our mission to foster a complete entrepreneurial ecosystem. This market will be a bustling hub where local farmers, artisans, and small business owners can showcase their products, fostering a sense of community and collaboration. It's a testament to our commitment to supporting local agriculture and promoting sustainability. I can't wait to witness the connections and opportunities that will blossom from this initiative. Moreover, Colorado is witnessing an exhilarating wave of new restaurant openings, each bringing fresh and unique culinary experiences to our tables. We're also seeing a rise in a talented up-and-coming chefs who are ready to leave their mark on our food scene with their innovative approaches and creative visions. I'm particularly excited about building new relationships with farmers and ranchers whose hard work and dedication are the backbone of our food supply chain. Their stories of perseverance and passion deserve to be told and celebrated. Our food tours and visits will allow us to experience firsthand the remarkable offerings from different corners of the state. From the bustling streets of Denver to the serene landscapes of the Western Slope, we will embark on a flavorful adventure, discovering the soul of Colorado's cuisine. Thank you for being a part of this incredible journey. I look forward to sharing these experiences with you and celebrating the culinary excellence that makes Colorado truly special. So to continue on with the Colorado Food Magazine, here's an article on The Regular, Peruvian Culinary Masterpieces. Hidden gem alert! If you're looking for a must-try dining experience in Denver, look no further than The Regular. I had the distinct pleasure of experiencing magnificent hospitality and food at this downtown hotspot. Chef Brian D'Souza and his wife Sid have truly designed and executed a place that should be a highlight of Denver's dining scene. Originally hailing from Peru, Chef Brian brings a cacophony of flavors, textures, and ingredients to the table that will leave your taste buds dancing. The fusion of traditional Peruvian techniques with contemporary culinary innovations results in dishes that are not only delicious, but also visually stunning. Each bite is a journey through Chef Brian's heritage with a modern twist that keeps you guessing and eager for the next course. Sid, with her warm and inviting presence, ensures that every guest feels like part of the family. Her passion for creating a welcoming atmosphere is evident in every detail, from the beautifully curated decor to the impeccable service. Together, Brian and Sid have created more than just a restaurant. They've crafted an experience that lingers long after the meal is over. The Regular offers a dynamic menu that evolves with the seasons, ensuring that every visit is a new adventure. Their commitment to using fresh, locally sourced ingredients not only supports local farmers, but also guarantees the highest quality in every dish. Whether you're in the mood for a hearty meal or a light bite, there's something on the menu for everyone. I can't say enough good things about what they have created. 5 stars, located at 1422 Market Street in the heart of downtown Denver. This is a spot that you won't want to miss. Next, we have something from Taste of the Peaks. Autumnal Equinox, pears, fennel, arugula, oh my. This by Lauren Knight of Nederland. Fall is here. Pears are at the height of the season and so far are proving to be pretty yummy. They can be a bit finicky to catch at the perfect ripeness, seeming to be too hard, then bruising easily when too ripe. However, there are ways to use them at all stages of ripeness. When they're still a touch under, think of grilling, roasting, or poaching. Perfectly ripe pear is great for baked desserts, salads, and snacks. Overripe pears can be turned into pear butter for toast or great for quick breads. Here's a recipe for pear fennel arugula salad. Lemon Dijon vinaigrette and toasted walnuts. Slice the pears, shave the fennel very thin, place in a bowl along with the arugula. Toast the walnuts in the oven on 400 degrees for just a few minutes until golden brown, and keep checking and stir as nuts will burn quickly. Toss all together. Next, for oven-braised pears, cut 2 pears in half lengthwise. Use a small spoon or a melon baller to scoop out seeds and cut out the stem. In a baking dish, place pears and add Moscato or Sauterne dessert wine to cover about 1/3 to halfway up the pears. Add a cinnamon stick, 1/4 cup of brown sugar, and 2 tablespoons of butter. This is optional. Cover and bake in the oven until soft, about 20 minutes depending on the ripeness of the pear. Extra additions can be raisins, fresh ginger, dried cranberries, orange zest. Serve with ice cream, whipped cream, or by themselves. Enjoy. The Nederland Farmer Market is held in downtown Nederland in May to October. Next, Colorado loves its blue corn. With its striking blue hue and deep earthy flavor, blue corn has become a symbol of Colorado cuisine. All across the state, restaurants, distilleries and modern-day processors of the grain have introduced blue corn into chips, muffins, pancake mix, cereals, and spirits. Indigenous to Colorado, the Pueblo Indians used blue corn for maize and alcohol, as documented by the Spanish explorer Coronado in 1540. Most likely, the Pueblo tribe was introduced to the grain by it being gifted from either the Hopi or Navajo tribes, native to southwest United States and the mountainous regions in Mexico. During most of the 20th century, many Americans outside of New Mexico and Arizona would have known of only one blue food, and that being blueberries. It wasn't until the late 1980s, after being featured in several popular food magazines, that blue corn began to make its mark beyond the southwest as a chic culinary ingredient. Once it caught on as being the latest food fad, blue corn steadily began to take root as a viable agricultural crop of the region. For the most part, blue corn is identical to yellow corn with one major difference, the presence of anthocyanins. This is a naturally occurring dye which also contains many antioxidant properties. The corn variety, although bioidentical to yellow corn, has a higher protein count and can be grown with less water at higher elevations. Declan Watts, local distiller and part owner of Rick Thomas Distillery in Black Hawk, Colorado, uses the grain in recipes for both whiskey and bourbon. From the beginning, the distillery was dedicated to developing products using only locally sourced heritage grains grown in Colorado. Blue corn adds a more pronounced floral note to the nose and produces a deeper flavor in the whiskey, says Watts. With the culinary significance of blue corn now ingrained in Colorado cuisine, you can find it on the menu in many restaurants across the state. Several establishments even use it directly in their branding. The Blue Corn Taco, located in Longmont, has great reviews and a dedicated stream of patrons. There's also the Blue Corn Cafe and Mercantile in Montrose, and the Blue Corn Harvest Bar and Grill, which opened this year, is located in Round Rock. For residents of the Peak to Peak looking for Blue Corn food options outside of the distillery, you will need to make your own. Luckily, the Mountain People's Co-op sells an all-organic blue corn masa flour for tortillas and breads, and both the co-op and B&F Market, located in the Caribou Shopping Center, have pre-made chip varieties available. For anyone interested in trying out this hearty, vibrantly colored grain, you'll find a traditional recipe for blue corn tortillas on page 17. To further wrap things up, no pun intended, we have included the origin story of how blue corn came to be such an important part of Hopi Indian culture. A gift of blue corn. Each spring, all aspects of Hopi life were centered around the planting and cultivation of corn. Producing enough corn for the rest of the year was crucial for the survival of the tribe. As the crops matured and became ready, they would celebrate the harvest and retell the story of how the tribe was first gifted the sacred food. Long ago, the guardian spirit, Ma'asa, appeared to the Hopi to offer many gifts. They were given a piece of wood that would become the Hopi planting stick, a bag of corn kernels, a gourd of water, and a small ear of blue corn. Ma'asa then directed the clan to extend their migration beyond their usual territory. Through this, they would learn new ways to cultivate the corn for a better life and stronger tribe. For the Hopi, these gifts developed into a life that embraced unity, selflessness, harmony with nature, and the responsible stewardship of the land. With that, blue corn became the staple of their culture and remains present in every ceremony. It was the first solid food given to their children, and the last meal given to those passing on to the spiritual hereafter. Here's the recipe for easy blue corn tortillas. Ingredients: 1.5 cups of blue corn masa, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and warm water. Preparation: in a large bowl, you're going to add all of the ingredients and mix well while adding 1 tablespoon of warm water at a time to form a dough, about 5 minutes. To test the consistency, roll up a small ball. When pressed, the dough should not crack. If it does, add 1 tablespoon of water at a time until you have reached the right consistency. If the dough is too sticky, add a small amount of masa and knead it until it is no longer sticky. Roll the masa into small round balls about the size of a golf ball. This will yield about 12 tortillas. Cover the dough balls and let rest for 10 to 15 minutes. To cook, you're going to heat an iron skillet or griddle to medium-high heat. Use a tortilla press to flatten the balls. If you don't have a press, just place the balls between 2 pieces of plastic wrap and flatten using a book, baking dish, or a rolling pin. Place the flattened dough on the griddle using no oil and cook for 15 seconds. Flip the tortilla and cook for an additional 50 to 55 seconds more, turning the tortilla again to cook for another 50 to 55 seconds. It's best to prepare the tortillas fresh and serve warm. Leftovers can be stored in the refrigerator or frozen for later use. Thank you for joining us for Colorado Kitchen Stories, read by Gretchen Miller.